Get into our questions with the panelists and some of the voters. I'd like to ask you one thing. Senator Dianne Feinstein, as you know, also went through a recalled election almost 20 years ago to the month. She described it as one of the most horrible emotional events that she had ever gone through, being subjected to a recall election shortly after voters put her in office. Emotionally, how are you handling this? How are you feeling about this?
Well, it's not an easy time for my wife Sharon or I, and it's not fun seeing everyone condemn you up and down the 24-hour news cycle. But I know the problems that we're dealing with pale in comparison to the problems of the people I represent.
Okay.
I've gotten their message. I know they're angry. This has been a humbling experience. But I also know they want me to fight for their future. So I have specific things I want to get done, including re-regulating energy, including...
We're going to get to those.
All right.
We're going to get to those. Thank you. But we'll get to them. Trust me. We're now also going to be joined by our panel of journalists with questions for the governor. Let me introduce you to them. From the Contra Costa Times is political editor Dan Borenstein. Dan. Pilar Morero is with La Opinion, the largest circulation Spanish newspaper in the state. Pilar. And John Myers represents public broadcast radio station KQED-FM in Sacramento. John, thank you for being with us. Now, also joining us on stage are several California voters who have submitted questions for the governor. We will be getting to them also, and they will have their questions for the governor. Now, in keeping with time constraints, we're going to ask that the answers be limited to 1 minute. We're going to try to keep it in that time frame.
Okay.
Now, let's start with this, Governor. In acknowledging this unprecedented recall, you've admitted that you made mistakes. As a matter of fact, as recently as Monday at the state, at the fairgrounds in Pleasanton in Alameda County, you said, and I'm going to quote you as closely as I can, "If the good voters of California allow me to serve out my term, I will do things differently and I will make changes." Specifically, what do you feel you did wrong and what changes will you make?
Well, there are a number of things, but I think the biggest thing I will change is to stay connected to the people of this state. When I was first elected to the Assembly, I had town hall meetings. I talked to people. I learned a lot. I got a lot of good ideas. Governing should be a two-way street. And you get wrapped up in Sacramento talking to legislators who are important, talking to various lobbyists who are important, talking to constituency groups. But at the end of the day, the people put you there in the first place, and you have to stay connected to them. So that's why we asked, and I'm glad that you agreed to have some citizens here tonight that I can talk to face-to-face, answer their questions, learn from them, and they can hear some of the conflicting pressures that I have to deal with as governor.
But you said you made mistakes. Specifically, what are you saying you did
wrong? Well, I think I was too slow to act on the energy crisis. However, this is what we were faced with, and I think people ought to know. Everyone was telling me we should raise consumer rates, even though the promise of deregulation was that rates would go down. And I felt that something had gone amiss either with the utilities or the energy companies, and the consumer should not have to pay the full boat. Everyone asked me to do it. So I hesitated and hesitated because I didn't want to do that. Eventually, we raised rates about 10 to 20%, but not the 400% we wanted. We did build 24 plants. People conserved magnificently, and our lights did not go off 2 weeks ago like they did on the East Coast and they did in London. And that's because we have made the investments and generated the conservation to prepare for California's future.
Okay. Let's turn now to our journalists. First, Dan Borenstein, political editor of the Contra Costa Times newspaper. Dan?
Thank you, Dennis. Governor, you recently said, quote, "What's happening here is part of an ongoing national effort to steal elections Republicans cannot win." But Lieutenant Governor Cruz Bustamante says that voters who signed the recall petition were, quote, "sending a real strong message to the people in the state of California, especially its leadership in Sacramento," unquote. Governor, was there a message? And if so, what was it?
There's no question there was a message. And the message was that people are angry. I understand their lives are not going as well as they were a couple years ago. And I understand I am the brunt of their concern. But I do believe that at the heart of this in the beginning were a group of Republicans who were upset they couldn't win last November's election. And they did try and do what they've done with President Clinton to try and impeach him in 1998 after they couldn't defeat him in 96. They did in Florida where Al Gore got more votes anyway, but it looked like he might actually win the presidency, so they stopped the vote count there. and now we won the election in November, and they wanted to have a do-over. It'd be like the Oakland Raiders saying to Tampa Bay, well, we know you beat us the first time, but we want to play the Super Bowl again. So that that effort by Republicans got the ball rolling, but they did tap into some genuine anger that I recognize, and that's why I'm fighting hard to reform workers' compensation, improve stem cell research, and expand HMO reform. We have the toughest laws in the country, but we want to expand them even farther.
Dan, you have a follow-up?
Yeah. You came into office promising to govern from the center, Governor. But after the recall qualified for the ballot, you started describing yourself as a progressive. What are you, a centrist or a progressive? And why have you suddenly started describing yourself as a progressive?
Well, I said in my first inaugural address, Dan, that I would take a good idea wherever it came from the right, the center, or the left. And I have maintained that posture from the very beginning. I do believe government's role is to help people, to be a safety net, and I do believe that many of the policies I've pursued fill that overall goal. So I don't find any inconsistency. Being a centrist doesn't mean you take the middle line on every issue. It means when you add up the compilation of what I've done, from stem cell research to protecting the coast to being a strong environmentalist to extending women's benefits, particularly in health care, and also a strong stand on public safety and homeland security. When you add it all up, you may say I'm in the center, but that doesn't mean I'm in the center on every issue.
But why does that suddenly come into your lexicon, the word progressive?
Well, I've called myself a progressive most of my career. I mean, I think these labels matter less than what you actually do and who you fight for. And I'm very proud, for example, to have worked with Jackie Speier and signed the toughest privacy law in America. No longer, starting next July, can a bank take your bank balance or your spending patterns and sell it to another company who's going to solicit you to buy their product without your express permission. Now, that's standing up for the consumer. In that case, that was a progressive position.
Pilar Moreno, political editor, La Opinión. Your question for the governor?
Yes, Governor. While community clinics are closing and class sizes are starting to increase again, you provided a 34% pay raise over 4 years for the prison guards, whose union has been generous to your campaign. Why?
Well, if you look at the... I know that's a conventional criticism, Pilar, and that's a good question. But if you look at the budget this year has about $40 billion plus for education, K-12, and community college, state college, and university, and about $5 billion for the prisons. All of the raises that were given last year are being renegotiated. The California Highway Patrol, which is generally seen as the premier employee organization in California, had a 7.5% pay raise. They gave back 5% of that, so they only have a 2.5% pay raise in recent negotiations, and other unions are going through that process. So at the end of the day, I think you'll see some concessions coming from all organizations, including the prison guards. But my passion is on education, and let's not forget that over 5 years, test scores have gone up each of the 5 years. SAT scores were up this year. And I was the first governor to substantially increase funding above what the law required, providing $13 billion beyond what the law required, so that when I inherited this job, California ranked 43rd in per capita spending. We're now 27th. And as I say, the proof is in the pudding. Test scores are up 5 years in a row.
Pilar, you have a follow-up.
Yeah, it's a good thing you mentioned education, because in this recent budget, tuition fees for colleges and universities were raised 25% to 30%. This is hitting very hard on the working class and the middle class that has a tougher time paying for a higher education. How did you defend allowing that, calling yourself the education governor?
That's a very good question. And let me tell you how that happened. The Republicans took this position. They would not raise taxes at all costs. They would rather shoot their mother than increase any taxes. I say that figuratively, but there was no circumstances under which they would raise taxes, even though they did it. $7 billion for Governor Wilson. They did $4 billion for Governor McMachin. So what did that mean? The Republican budget said that they wanted to virtually eliminate the freshman class at the University of California in 2004 and reduce by 40% the admissions to the Cal State system and increase the fees to community colleges by $26. We were able to fight most of those off, but the net result were more increases in fees than I would like. But still, there is a freshman class. The fees of the community colleges went up $18. which is by far the lowest in America. The next lowest is at $25. So while I regret every fee increase, believe me, what threatened, the budget the Republicans threatened, was far worse than the one I signed. And the education community will tell you nobody fought harder for education in this budget than I did.
Thank you, Governor. The third member of our panel, John Myers of Sacramento Bureau Chief of KQED-FM. John?
Thank you, Dennis. Governor, one of the most controversial budget decisions this year was the $4 billion increase in the vehicle license fee, the so-called car tax.
Right.
Now, you argued against raising that tax in your January budget, but then you included the increase in your budget plans in May. And some say your administration's decision that the car tax should automatically go up was a way of avoiding blame. Now, almost every replacement candidate, including Lieutenant Governor Bustamante, says this tax increase hurts working families. Do you think raising the car tax was the right thing to do?
No. And I didn't, and I never proposed it. And as you correctly said, John, I opposed efforts to raise it early on. But the car tax was brought to us by the prior administration. The year before I was governor, they lowered the car tax. They delayed its implementation till I was governor. The car tax does not go to Sacramento. It goes to Walnut Creek. It goes to San Francisco. It goes to Santa Monica. It does not go to California. And it goes to pay primarily for fire and police. So when Wilson decided he wanted to lower that in 98, the mayors said, wait a minute, Governor. You tell us you're going to write a check to make up the difference to our local cities for what the fees used to be and now what they're lowered to. But we know someday you won't write the check. You got to guarantee us that if someday you don't write the check, the fees automatically go up. And so the Wilson car tax lowered your fees by $12 billion. I had to find room in my budget to provide that $12 billion, but it also automatically increased it when the state couldn't write the check this year.
But with all due respect, do you see how your rejection of the increase followed by this automatic increase strikes some people as trying to have it both ways?
No, because I proposed $8 billion worth of taxes. The Republicans would rather raise rates at the University of California, the community colleges, then raise taxes on the wealthy. They would rather kick off and propose kicking off 400,000 kids off the Healthy Families program than they would raise taxes on cigarettes. And they would rather raise fees to $26 from what they used to be, $11, I'm forgetting what the other point was, but the bottom line is they resisted the tax increases that would have allowed us to write the check to local government to avoid having the car tax go up. Because they didn't vote for the tax increases, we ran out of money, and we ran out of money, we literally couldn't write the check to local government.
Governor, we're going to shift gears now and allow you to take questions from some of the very people who will be deciding whether or not you remain in office. Our guests were selected from the hundreds of people who emailed questions to KTVU Channel 2 News, Contra Costa Times, and KQED. We want to welcome all of you. Thank you for taking part. Our first question is from Mr. John Popescu of San Francisco. John?
Thank you, Governor.
Thank you, John.
I'm an unemployed high-tech engineer. Since my job loss, I feel alienated and I feel forgotten. I simply cannot compete with offshore cheaper labor, nor can I compete with labor coming into this country, specifically here in California, on H-1B and L-1 visas. What is your solution to this problem?
First of all, I feel badly that you're no longer employed. I can just tell by your statement and your demeanor that you're a very thoughtful, responsible person. And we'd obviously rather have you working than not working. What have we done to try and improve your situation? Well, I increased the unemployment insurance rather considerably and made it retroactive to September 11th, 2001, when a number of people lost their jobs for a different reason. But that also swept in some people from the technology community that were affected primarily by the collapse of the dot-com bubble. We've invested a lot of money in the Bay Area in biotechnology, training people. We've got a major initiative going with UCSF and Berkeley on that. And I believe strongly that we should discourage people moving jobs offshore. And I said this year I would sign two bills that penalize corporations that incorporate in Bermuda and the Caribbean, saying, we don't care if you incorporate there anymore. We're going to tax you as if you're still in California. And if you still want to incorporate in the Caribbean, we're going to deny you the opportunity to do any business with the state, build any roads, sell us textbooks, sell us computers, sell us software. You won't be able to do any business with us if you insist on moving offshore.
Okay, thank you, Governor. Our next question is from Pamela Moody, and she's from Martinez, California. Pamela.
Hi, Pamela. I'm a single working mom on a limited income, and I also want good education, better roads, safety as far as officers and whatnot. How do you plan to fix the budget problem without increasing my taxes, tripling my car registration, and removing Proposition 13 and leaving a little bit more in my pocket to support my family?
That's a very good question. I'm not sure I can answer it to your satisfaction. Let's just take the car tax again. If that went up pursuant to a law that Governor Wilson signed, if that had not gone up, we would have had a public safety emergency in this state. And all you have to do is ask your mayors or your county supervisors. They would tell you there wouldn't be nearly as many sheriffs on the road or nearly as many police officers because they depend on that tax primarily for fire and police. I don't want anyone's taxes to go up. And in fact, taxes went down $12 billion just for the car tax since I've been governor. This tax goes up 1 year for sure, which is $4 billion, and then we evaluate next year. But I do believe that California is not the highly taxed state that my opponents would want you to believe. Several articles in the Chronicle said we ranked 19th or 20th, and the LA Times said taxes are actually lower in California per capita than they were 10 years ago and much lower than they were 20 years ago. So
sure.
I know taxes are a pain in the neck. No one wants to pay them. But unfortunately, if we're going to keep the people employed, be they nurses, teachers, sanitation workers, post-op workers, paramedics, police, and fire, we have to pay the salary to keep them on the job.
Thank you, Governor. Our next question is from Barbara Inasugu of Santa Monica. Barbara.
Good afternoon, Governor.
Barbara, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Excuse me. I've been watching the legislature a lot, and it's very easy to see that what they do affects us in our homes very directly. Now, you have said that you will do things differently. I would like to know, what will you do to encourage your term-limited legislature to engage in long-term planning rather than relying on quick fixes?
That's a very good question, Barbara, and we started we've asked the legislature to have their appropriations committees consider the budget and spending issues in three-year increments. Not just look at the first-year cost, but look at the second-year cost and the third-year cost. Because frequently, programs ramp up, and they cost a lot more money down long-term than short-term. I would be open to a two-year budgeting cycle that would force us to make decisions on a 24-month basis. You could review them and modify them on a 12-month basis, but we need to be looking beyond 12 months. The consequences of not doing so are what got us into this mess in the first place. I have long believed that California does need some sort of spending restraint, which means we can't spend every dollar that's available in the good years. And trust me, Republicans will find tax relief programs that they'll support. Democrats will find new spending programs they'll support. They'll all be good things, but the sum total of it may exceed what we'll have in the coffers the following year. So that means putting aside money, possibly money that comes from capital gains receipts, in the reserve that only gets spent if the reserves exceeds a certain level, and then only on one-time projects like transportation or
Thank
capital
you,
projects.
Our next question is from Timothy Rodriguez of Berkeley. Timothy.
Hi, Timothy. Thanks for being here, Governor.
Thank you, sir.
I'm one of the 8 million people you talk about who voted for you in the last election, but I'm concerned that I won't be able to do it in this election.
Well, we need to talk then.
Yes, sir. what I need is a reason to vote for you rather than to vote against your opponents. And in my opinion, you've played it kind of safe in your time in office, which I don't think is good enough for the state and certainly isn't good enough when we're in a budget crisis. So if experience counts in this election, as you say it does, what experience did you bring to the table in the budget situation? And how are you going to guarantee to me that if I vote for you for the new Gray Davis, I'm not going to get the old Gray Davis once you're back in office?
Believe me, this has been an awakening for me. I know people are upset. And it's not fun hearing it day in and day out. I mean, just imagine if you go through your whole day and you turn on the news and everyone's battering you and calling you all kinds of names. It's, you had a wonderful life and strong faith in God to sustain yourself through that. So I'm not going to retreat from the promises I've made, which is I'm going to stay connected with you. And even if not one press person comes to a town hall we have here in Walnut Creek, I'm going to have them. I used to have them when I was an assembly member, and no press would show up. It didn't matter, because I would get a lot of good ideas. Now, what did I do? Let me just take the energy crisis, because that is a major issue. Without going through the details, California had its hands tied when I became governor, because it had told the utilities, sell your plants to other people, have the other people, which are the end runs of the world, sell you back the power, and then sell it to you. But we sell it to you, reduce it by 5%. But the state surrendered the ability in deregulation to control the transaction between the people who bought, say, PG&E's plant and what they sold it to PG&E for. Those people raised PG&E's rates 400%. PG&E went to bankruptcy. We had to buy power. We had the Wall Street Journal, all kinds of editorial boards, everybody saying we were doing the wrong thing. But still, we fought to get 24 plants online. We fought for conservation. Remember our 2020 program where we gave you incentives to conserve? It took some experience to get through that, to get the investment we needed in our energy infrastructure so we can sustain our high technology. That's the kind of experience you need. When you smell something is wrong, you can't quite prove it, and 2 years later the federal government says, you're right, 40 companies manipulated California.
Okay, Governor, thank you. Our next question is from Vic Malhotra. He's from Sacramento. Vic.
Good afternoon, Governor.
Thanks for coming.
Also appearing on the October 7th ballot will be Proposition 54, right, an initiative that would ban the state from collecting data on race, ethnicity, and national origin. I'd like to ask you what your position is on Proposition 54, and if you remain governor, what will you do to address the divisiveness that seems to plague Californians as we become increasingly diverse?
That is an excellent question. I am 100% against Proposition 54. I think it's really a ban on information. And let me give you two specific examples. I'm proud of the progress we've made in education. We have a long ways to go, but believe me, we're challenging every child. We know every child can become a better, more productive person. Every teacher can do better. Every governor can do better. And we have 5 years of improvement. But we're not interested in the average improving the class. We want every ethnic group to improve. So we collect data based on how are Latino students doing, how are African American students doing. And in the days when we had money and we could reward schools for meeting their improvement goals, we wouldn't give them any money unless every group met the improvement goals, not just the average. So if you don't have that data, you don't have the information to modify the curriculum, retrain the teacher, put in remedial programs to make sure that Latino, African American, Asian, or Anglo students don't get left behind. A second reason is drug companies depend on the kind of data we collect to make sure the drugs they provide for you work for you. I mean, you want a drug that works for you, not one that works for a different ethnic group. And the kind of information we have would not be available to drug companies, thereby forestalling their progress to help us live better, longer lives.
Great. Thank you, Governor. I want to thank our panel members here, our citizens, all great questions.
The reporters get a follow-up.
Yeah.
The citizens are there.
Their follow-up will be in the voting booth.
Well, that's true. All right. Well, all the more reason they should get a follow-up here.
Okay. Governor, we want to thank you for joining us today. It's been enlightening. I know something that you wanted to do. And before we conclude this portion of our program, we'd like to offer you about 60 seconds or so for a closing statement.
Well, I want to thank KTVU for having this forum, and I particularly want to thank the citizens for coming here. Some of you came from quite a distance. Democracy depends on an informed citizenry, and I learned one thing in Sacramento. You can't just sit up in Sacramento and work 14, 15 hours a day and govern well. You have to be in touch with people to know their hopes and aspirations and their frustrations. I'll do my third town hall tomorrow. And in my second one, about three came up to me and complained about a given department. I never would have heard that through the bureaucracy. Now, I've made some calls. We've already made some changes. So not only do you get feedback that can help make adjustments that positively affect people's lives, but you get good ideas. My promise is that if you allow me to complete the term that you elected me to last November, I will not only fight for more stem cell research, better schools, a better environment. We'll work hard to try and improve the economy, but I will keep in touch with you because citizens are the strength and the sustenance of a vibrant democracy, and no governor can do well unless he keeps in touch with the wellspring of democracy, which are the people of this great state.
Governor, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank you.